Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Saturday, November the 12th, and welcome to our commentary. You know, I've been looking over some reports about the election, because obviously a lot of us are wondering, whatever happened? Whatever happened to the blue wave? Well, it turns out that, whatever happened to the red wave? You know, we had been hearing all about this big red wave coming and so on and so on. And, you know, we've been hearing from a lot of people that there was a red wave coming. Well, it turns out that there was a red wave, believe it or not, that in fact, it was actually pretty good. That if you look at the popular vote for the U.S. House of Representatives, the Republican vote was extremely much higher than the Democrats. What happened was, and this is where it really hurt the red wave, many independents, like 4% of the independents, decided to vote for the Democrats. And that's what really kept this from being a huge red wave. And this is what kept this from being a normal midterm election. Usually in the midterm elections, the independents punish the incumbent, so they go against the incumbent. They didn't this time. And why did that happen? What are some of the reasons that it didn't happen? Well, a lot of it was, some of it was abortion, particularly in the blue states. There were many women who voted on the basis of abortion. They thought that, you know, the right to choose was in play and all of that. The irony of the women in blue states who voted that way is that none of them lost their right to choose. In fact, if you live in a blue state, more than likely you're going to have something very similar to Roe v. Wade in your state if you don't have it already. But yet they were, you know, there was a certain mobilization there, you know, on the part of the abortion people, getting women to express their position regarding abortion, and they did. They did, and that's why some of the blue states, Democrats have won so many races in blue states. There was also apparently young people who were very impressed with the loan forgiven, that loan forgiving, forgiving the loan program, whatever they call it, that President Biden signed, the executive order that he signed a few weeks ago. There were apparently many young people who thought that was a very good idea. And they voted for the Democrats. So the combination of those two groups, particularly in the blue states, made it possible for them to break the red wave. Now, these two, the loan forgiving executive order, which, by the way, was found unconstitutional a couple of days ago, plus the abortion issue, did not really impact any of the governors running for reelection in red states, like Governor Abbott here, Governor DeSantis in Florida, and some of the other governors. They were not impacted by that. It was more in the blue states where the abortion issue was a big help to the Democrats, no question about that, as well as the college loan for whatever they call it. I know there's a name for it. I can't think of it. But where they are basically forgiving or canceling, that's the word, canceling some of your loan debt that you had accumulated. That was apparently very important in some of the blue states, and that's what prevented the red wave, if you will, from going into some of these blue states. So that's kind of the explanation. So it was not that the Republicans didn't turn out. They did. They did turn out in pretty big numbers. It's just that those independents that we were counting on, independents who normally turn against the incumbent on these midterm elections, enough of them did not turn against President Biden. And as a consequence, voted Democrat, largely because of this college loan program, as well as the abortion issues. So that's kind of the best explanation I can give you. So it wasn't so much that the polling data was wrong about the red wave or the turnout. There was a big red turnout. It's just that we needed some help from the independents, and we didn't get it as much as we thought we were going to get it this year. And that's what turned this red wave into something a lot less than that. Now, the way it looks right now, the House is still, they're still counting votes over at the House. But the Republicans are in the direction of taking over the House. There are 23 that who have not declared a winner, and all the Republicans have to do is win 7 of those 23, and they will have the 218 minimum majority to win the House. So 7 of 23 is where we are right now in order for the Republicans to pick the House. Now, those districts are in lots of different places. There's one in Colorado. I saw the numbers here recently. That looks like it will go Republicans. There are some in California. There are some isolated here and there. But again, there's 23, and the Republicans just have to pick up 7 of those 23, and they will have the majority in the House. So they'll probably end up picking a few more than 7, and my guess is that they will have a majority with maybe 220 or 225 majority in the House. Now, that's not the majority we thought we were going to get, but nevertheless, it is a majority, and that's all you need, a majority to make the House or to make a Republican the Speaker of the House. Now, that it's going to be controversial, too, because there's some concern about Mr. McCarthy being the Speaker. I hope that he is, because right now, given what we've just gone through, we don't need another fight. We don't need another fight. So put McCarthy as the Speaker for now. He's a pretty good guy. Put him as the Speaker and put aside some of the differences, because we don't need that right now. This is not a time to be fighting about who the Speaker is going to be. Now, as far as the Senate, they called the Arizona campaign for Senator Kelly. So he was reelected. I thought it was interesting that they gave it to him with only 83% of the vote. And there are about 5 points separating Mr. Kelly from Mr. Masters. I would have thought they would have waited a little bit for that, unless they have some information in the, you know, in the vote that has not been counted that we don't know. But if you only have 83% and you're divided by 5 points, I would have waited a little bit longer. I would have waited maybe till 90% to make a call like that, but they made it. The governor's race in Nevada went Republican. The governor's race in Arizona is still too close to call, so we'll see what happens with that one. Over in Nevada, the Senate election, this is one I was really rooting for. At the moment, Senator or Mr. Laxalt, the Republican, has a lead of about less than 1,000 votes. It's like 830 or something like that. They are expecting some votes today. A lot depends where they come from. But if they come primarily from the city, that will help the Democrats considerably. There are still some rural counties, though, waiting for their votes to be counted. So we'll probably have a better idea of that election sometime on Monday, maybe this weekend, but more than likely on Sunday. As it stands right now, it's 49-49. The Republicans are 49. The Democrats are 49. Nevada, if Nevada goes Democrat, then Georgia, the Republicans really need Georgia to keep it at 50-50. If Nevada goes fifth for a Republican, then the Republicans could win the majority in Georgia. It's that close. Everything is that close in this election. A crazy election, to say the least. I have a post, and it's going to be coming out Sunday morning, about President Trump and whether or not he should declare for the presidency this coming week. Apparently, he's planning to. Not official, but he's planning to. And I would recommend to Mr. Trump and anybody who can reach him that he should delay that announcement, that, in fact, he should stay away a little bit right now, because the focus is getting Herschel Walker elected. It is extremely vital that Herschel Walker makes it to the Senate, because he's either going to be number 50 or number 51. So he has got to win that election. And any distractions brought about by Trump or anybody else is not going to be helpful. So right now, President Trump and everybody should just focus on getting Herschel Walker elected. Everything else can happen later. Everything else can happen later. Also, if President Trump waits and we get Herschel Walker elected, that's going to be, a feather in the cap for President Trump, because he supported Herschel Walker. So my advice to the former president is just to lay low and stay away from any of these disputes with Mitch McConnell and this and this and that. Yeah, we don't need that right now. So if you're watching me, Mr. President, we don't need that right now. We don't need any of that. We got to get Herschel Walker elected in Georgia. That's priority number one. Everything else can wait. Everything else can wait. You know, one of the things that I like about, you know, this time of the year is that we can go back and enjoy or remember some of the elections of past years. And one of my favorite elections was 1972. This was the year that President Nixon was reelected with 49 states and over 60% of the popular vote. In fact, President Nixon in 1972, that's 50 years ago, was the last candidate for the presidency who broke the 60% mark in the popular vote. I mean, I know we don't go by popular vote, but it is an interesting, you know, bit of information. He was the last president to break the 60% mark in the popular vote. President Reagan came close to it, 59 point something in 1984, but he didn't break the 60% mark, but Richard Nixon did in 1972. And that, of course, was the election against George McGovern, who was a senator from North Dakota or South Dakota. That was a very interesting election for Richard Nixon. He had ended the war in Vietnam, which was the primary reason he was elected. He took the number of troops from 500,000 down to about 20,000. By the time the election day came about, most of the troops were out. None of the troops were really engaged in any combat. So the war was practically over. We were still in there, but the war, the daily war, you know, the weekly basket or casket coming home, that was over by 1972. And it was simply a question of winding down the war. So that was a huge success for President Nixon and one of the reasons he was reelected. He also became sort of an international statesman. In 1972, he went to China, that very historic trip. And then he had an important trip to the Soviet Union where they signed the SALT I or SALT II treaty. So it was a very successful year for President Nixon in many fronts. And that's why he was reelected, because the Democrats were a bit of a disarray when they nominated George McGovern. So 1972, 50 years ago this week, the last time that a president broke the 60% popular vote mark, his name was President Richard Nixon, who, of course, less than two years later, resigned the presidency because of Watergate. So you talk about ups and downs. You talk about being up. You talk about being down. His entire career really was a career of ups and downs. You know, he lost the presidency in 1960. He was defeated in 1962 when he ran for governor. Most people thought he was out of politics, and he came back. He won the presidency. He had a difficult presidency toward especially the first term. But in the last couple of years of the first term, he really began to have a lot of success, which is why he was reelected. So we remember President Nixon 50 years ago this week, the election of 1972. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. And we'll talk to you later. This is Silvio Cantu in Dallas.